This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And today we're going to be talking about the Colleen McKernan story and a big part of her trial. And we have a special guest with us. I'm not going to say she played a part in the whole thing, because that would be weird to say. But she knows both of the people who took part in it. And, you know, she does have some backstory to add to it. She does wish to remain anonymous, so for the sake of our episode, we're going to call her Annie. And I will be changing her voice, so, you know, if you hear a little interspurse of mine and Ben's voices being changed too, it's just editing issues. But yeah, she might sound a little bit funny, but yeah, it's just for her own anonymity, because, you know, I don't know that I would necessarily want my name thrown around with, you know, this type of a case myself.
But thank you for joining us, Annie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And just know that we may have differing opinions on this, and that's fine. We're all adults here, so we don't need to, you know, get mad at each other.
But true. And I want to say, as far as like that facet as well, I'm just going to be putting out possible theories and ideas, but like, yeah, none of us really know exactly what was going through this person's mind or what happened, right?
So right. Yeah. So just a little backstory and what had happened. We're not going to go into, you know, childhood traumas or anything like that, because honestly, it really doesn't apply to this particular story. But Colleen and Rob, they met at a friend's house, hit it off. They were engaged in February of 2014, and then they got married in April of 2014. So I guess you could describe it as one of those whirlwind romance type things. Both were veterans of the Air Force. She did like security type stuff for the Air Force.
So, was she active duty? Do we know if she was deployed?
Not during this, not when this happened. But she was.
I know not during, but Annie.
Oh, no, she went to Afghanistan.
Oh, okay. I just
So she was deployed.
Yeah, because I was in there for 4 years. To mention that in cases of like possible PTSD, right, which deployment big on military people having.
Right.
When we look at things about abused women, that's a subset of PTSD, and it can compile into a complex PTSD if multiple traumas have occurred in someone's life. So it's just something to think about.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, Colleen herself didn't have any prior criminal record in Stark County. This all happened in Ohio, by the way. This is my state. Yay. Now, Rob, unfortunately, had been charged 3 times with domestic violence, including one in September 2013. All 3 cases were eventually reduced to disorderly conduct, and he didn't serve any jail time. And it's unclear if any of the cases actually involved Colleen. And when they were dating, you know, that whole get to know you thing, you ask people questions. And I guess one of the questions that Colleen had asked him was if he'd ever been arrested. And he was honest and said, yes, it was due to domestic violence. And her, for some reason, she decided to accept his reasoning for whatever reason it was that he was hitting on his, you know, partner at the time. For me, that would have been an immediate, okay, nice to meet you, thanks, see you, bye-bye, not getting into this. But that's just me and my crazy self not wanting to get involved with.
Yeah, it's hard to know whatever his story was, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean,
yeah,
there's always two sides to things, so it's hard to know.
Okay, Annie, what is your relationship between Colleen and Rob, because you knew both of them? Yes.
So I became friends with them through one of Rob's friends, because I was dating him at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and at first I wasn't a fan, and then Colleen and I just kind of grew a friendship, you know, like we were all hanging out constantly. So I ended up really liking her. And Rob and I would stay up really late and like have really deep conversations. And so I didn't see that side ever in him. I saw it more in her.
Okay.
Because she was very aggressive. But so, I liked her still, nonetheless.
Does it surprise you to hear that he's been charged with domestic violence in the past?
Yes.
Okay.
It was hard for me to believe it. Sorry.
So during that time, you didn't know anything about those charges?
No, I did not.
And she never said anything either?
No.
I did watch the entire trial. Well, one trial. She actually had two. Both ended in hung juries. I did watch one full trial, and there were some testimony given that she wasn't necessarily the type of person to broadcast her problems to other people. Do you think that is an accurate statement? Like, if there was abuse, that she wouldn't have said anything about it?
No, I think that she would have said something. I feel that way. Especially to like a friend. I think that, I mean, the way that she confided in me about his coke problem and the fact that like who was taking him to get coke and that she had turned off his ATM card because she knew that he was going to buy drugs. So, I mean, if you're going to hide everything, wouldn't you want to hide drugs as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting for sure that, like, she's going to kind of badmouth him to you and tell you all his problems, but not mention that he's hit her.
Exactly.
Well, and the ATM thing card was actually supposed to be one of the issues as far as abuse from him towards her. Because I guess he had gotten drunk when they were out with friends and everything, and she took his card away so he couldn't, you know, buy any more drinks, and hid it. And I guess he got violent with her trying to find it. You know, of course, and this is according to her testimony.
Right.
And there were text messages that the defense offered to show Rob texting her apologizing for ever putting his hands on her and things like that. So, I mean, it does. I'm not going to say she has battered woman syndrome necessarily, because from what I understand, she was pretty confident, you know, just judging going off of other people's testimony.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't seem like, did you ever think she had any fear towards him at all?
Oh, 100% no. She ruled that relationship. At least the way that I saw it. Like, if she said jump, Rob would ask how high. If she said, no, you are not going to spend money, he had to be submissive to her because she would just turn off his credit card. Like, she knew how to do everything. She's like, all right, suspend this card. So he'd go to the ATM to withdraw money. I mean, even if it was for something bad, he would go, and then it was kind of like, all right, I guess, I mean, I can't use my card. It's canceled.
Yeah.
So it's like one of those things. I never felt like she was afraid of him ever.
Were there any times that he confided in you where she had possibly abused him?
No. He mainly talked about his childhood and like what his relationship was with his dad. And that was pretty much the only, because we both kind of talked about that. Cause I mean, Ben knows that I didn't really have that great of a relationship with my father, and he didn't have a great relationship with his father. I mean, he loved him nonetheless, but he didn't have the best upbringing. And so, but that's kind of like what we would talk about. It was very deep and emotional. And that's why I couldn't see the side that was being portrayed after he passed away.
And how was Rob when he was drinking?
What was that?
Ben, what would you say? Go ahead.
I said he was deployed as well at some point.
Yeah.
That I don't know.
Yeah, he was in the airport.
Childhood and that he's lived a hard life. for sure.
One.
My only point of that is if there were things, and you said there were texts where he had kind of admitted to hitting her, like those aren't things he's necessarily going to broadcast to people, but he's got the predispositionary aspects of life that could lead to that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. One thing I kind of wanted to touch on was every state has like their own self-defense laws. And during her, this happened in 2014. It's called duty to retreat, or it used to be called duty to retreat. It's duty to retreat law. Basically,
it
if
just
you
sounds
have
bad.
The option to leave, you have to before you administer violence on somebody.
It sounds bad. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, you shouldn't take a life if you can avoid taking a life. But like, in a life or death situation, you've got to sit there and determine whether or not you can get away. Like,
yeah, no, that's how it used to be. It's not anymore.
Right. And I get that they changed it, but it just seemed like a bad law to begin with.
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, but now we have the basically you're justified in using deadly force and self-defense only under the following situations: if they weren't at fault in creating the situation, there was threat of imminent or immediate death, there was not a reasonable means of retreat, and the use of such force was reasonable. According to her testimony, technically she, if you believe her, she met all of this criteria, but this wasn't in effect at the time. So her defense was there's no way she could have gotten out. And I'm going to play her testimony, different parts of her testimony, because it's insanely
Mandy,
long.
Before you play it, I just want to look at number one for a second. That one bothers me. There were... that you were not at fault for creating the situation. That's saying if like, is that like, if I verbally provoke you and then you try to attack me, I can't defend myself?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. That one seems not right.
Well, I mean, you got to keep
in
mind
too. I
can
be an asshole. Now my life is in danger.
Yeah. But I mean, when the duty to retreat law was in effect at the time, you're talking about necessary use of force, right?
Right.
You can use violence, deadly force, if you can't get away. In her case, she's saying that she couldn't because he was basically standing in her way of leaving and was coming at her.
Okay.
In which terms, you know, the only choice she had was to pull the trigger, which she did. She actually emptied the clip. There were 10 bullets in the clip, and she emptied all 10 of them into him. She claims she doesn't remember it, and we'll talk about more about dissociative states in a little bit, but under this law, they basically it would have been okay, well, you should have just shot once to disable him so you could get away. It's that type of mentality, you know, because most people don't necessarily end up emptying an entire clip into somebody, you know, that's like excessive, you know?
Right. But you said we'll talk about dissociative states later, and that's awesome. But just to add to what you said about the clip, it's like, if this is a crime of rage or something where you've detached from reality, like you're not going to limit yourself to one shot either. Right. Cause you don't have the ability to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, crimes of passion, especially if she really was dissociative, she dissociated herself. But I don't know, because obviously we weren't there. So the incident happened on New Year's Eve 2014 in Massillon, Ohio. Kind of the whole thing kicked off with her making a 911 call. I don't have the call because I can't. There was part of it in the clips that I found that I was watching on the trial, but for some reason it was only a partial clip. I don't know why. So I don't actually have the 911 call, but basically I guess she had told the 911 operator that her husband hit her for the last time. She had shot him. She was trying to do CPR. and all that, you know, screaming, she's so sorry. And, you know, you can hear her counting out the CPR, the chest compressions and everything like that.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting that, like, she seems to be doing CPR well into he's deceased.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Frantically trying to revive him.
Yeah, and there's one point where she said, I tried doing CPR, but he's dead. There's blood coming out of his mouth. It's over. He's fucking dead.
She broke his rib.
She broke his rib, yeah.
Which happens. That's normal.
It is, yeah. It's if you're doing it correctly anyway, it is.
Pause.
So before we really kind of jump into the trial, because obviously she was taken into custody that night, because she did do it. She, you know, never tried to deny anything and that type of thing. But Annie, you fortunately weren't there when it happened, but you were actually, so I guess, supposed to hang out with them that night.
Yes. She actually invited me over, told me to meet them at 11 because they were going to a friend's house prior. And she said, we'll be home at 11 because we want to ring in the new year at home. And so some people are coming over. Why don't you come over?
Do you remember who all was supposed to be there?
I think it was just a couple of Rob's friends and me. I think that I might have been the only girl, but I didn't really get into it because I was at work when she was texting and calling me. So I was kind of like, you know what? I don't really feel so hot. So let me go home and rest, and I'll let you know when it gets closer to 11. But I ended up sleeping until like 1 a.m.
Okay. And what happened? How did you get woken up?
I got woken up by your fucking friend killed. Am I allowed to cuss?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sorry. Okay. Your fucking friend killed my friend. Your fucking friend's a fucking psycho. My Rob's dead. Rob's dead. And I'm like, so that's what I woke up to. And so I instantly called his friend and I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's bawling his eyes out. His sister's like, you need to get over here right now. And so I went over and it like just kind of all came out, like, because I'm texting her and I'm like, where are you? What's going on? I mean, we had plans the next day. Do I think that she planned it? No, not at all. Yeah. Because we had plans. We were supposed to get together. She was going to help me. She was a very organized person. So she was going to help me get all of my, like, I wanted a structure of how to get all of my debt paid off or something like that. And she was going to help me. She was going to create all of this stuff to help me succeed. So for all of that to happen, I'm like, no, that couldn't have happened, because you're rationalizing in your brain. I'm like, we have plans tomorrow. She wouldn't do something like this, which is crazy to think of. Like, she just killed someone. But I'm thinking, well, we had plans. But that was like me not thinking clearly, because I don't know someone that would murder someone.
Right.
I think it's interesting.
Sorry, Mandy. I just think it's interesting that you were supposed to be there that night too. It just adds to the probably not premeditated at all, right? Which you kind of addressed, saying you don't think it's premeditated, unless, which is a scary thought, you were supposed to be involved in that, right? Like
that she was,
right?
It's in harming you as well, right? So that's scary, but probably not the case.
Well, I mean, that's like a very long shot in the door, because I mean, well,
it is, but like the time that you were going to be there is like almost when it happened, right?
Yes. And she had invited me to live with them at one point. When me and the other guy broke up, I moved in with one of my sisters for about a week and a half, and until I found where I was living when it all happened. But she was like, why don't you just move in with us? That'll help us with bills. She was very money conscious. So, like, that'll help us with bills. They had just gotten two puppies. Like, that'll help us. It was like, we'll help each other. And I'm like, I'm not moving in with a married couple. There's no way. I mean, my sister is different. She's family. I'm not moving in with a married couple who just got married and just got two puppies. No, thank you.
I can't say I blame you on that one. I literally all week long, the only thing I've been doing is watching her trial. And it's so surreal to sit here and talk to you, you know, because you were very involved with the both of them. And do you remember, do you know who one of her best friends, Kelly, do you know that name?
Yes.
And she was seeing Alex.
Yes. I think, aren't they married? Possibly, I think, at this point.
I think they are now, yeah.
Okay.
Couple kids.
What was Kelly and Rob's relationship? Do you know?
They were best friends. I feel that she was more Rob's best friend than she was Colleen's.
Okay.
I felt like they had a very close-knit relationship that I could remember.
Do you think there was anything untowards going on between the two of them? Because there was something brought up in trial where she had Rob's name tattooed somewhere on her body.
What? No, yeah. I did not know that. Yep.
That's kind of when that was brought out. I was just like, you know, because she was very, her testimony didn't put Colleen in a good light. We'll put it that way.
Oh, I believe it. I mean, I think that there was a love there between the two of them. And maybe, I mean, they all, I think, went to high school together. So there could have been a relationship at one point. But I know that she really did love Alex. So I don't think that there was anything going on during this.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the days after the shooting occurred?
Yeah. I couldn't get a hold of her, clearly, because she was in jail. And then I found out that she got released. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to her dad because, I mean, I kind of went into a really big depression because I just, you don't understand it. So I ended up reaching out to her dad. She reached out to me. I went to visit her when she was on house arrest. And which I was so scared. Like the whole entire time I was there, I think I went over there twice. And she was a different person. All of a sudden, she was talking about God constantly, which I had never heard her even mumble God. So I didn't understand this. And she was like, she was very spiritual. She was, I felt like she was like, do you remember? Do you remember me telling you? Do you remember me telling you that? And I'm like, no, you never said that to me.
Do you think she was trying to help build up her defense in having you over and chatting you up with stuff like that?
Yes, I truly do believe that because she ended up having her attorney call me and he point blank asked me, what was your relationship with Rob? And I said, I thought Rob was a great guy, but I didn't know him for that long. Like when all of this stuff came out about him abusing women, I had to research it myself because I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one had ever told me that that was his MO.
Interesting. Do you know of any anger issues with him? Anything like outbursts of anger?
No, if anything, I saw that in her.
Very curious.
Yeah, she was always the one that was kind of like, she was the dictator of that relationship, hands down. Like, she decided what they were eating. She decided where he was going. If he wanted to do something without her permission, she was pissed.
Wow.
She didn't like it.
That's a completely different
version of her than the way she testified on the stand.
Oh, yeah. She totally played it up. I couldn't even watch it. I was like, that's not even you. You were very aggressive. I was very put off by her. But then it was kind of a forced relationship. But then I, you know, I always find compassion towards people. So I ended up befriending her because I'm like, well, she's not going anywhere. And now I'm starting to enjoy her company. But she was always the, no, we're leaving now. No, we're doing this. No, this is how we're doing it. It was always her way or the highway.
Did you feel that Rob had a drinking problem? Because I know that was something that he had actually mentioned to his mother at one point, that what him and Colleen were fighting about one morning, he went over to his mom's house and was talking that.
I think they both had a drinking problem. Oh, yeah. I think that when they both started drinking, they couldn't stop.
Okay.
And how long was he using cocaine?
That I know of?
Yeah.
I know that he probably started using it right around October or November of that year.
Oh, okay.
And then in December is when she found out that he was getting a ride somewhere to get it from my ex.
Oh.
And she shut off his ATM card. It was either like right after Thanksgiving, but early December.
It's really interesting because it's like everything about Rob's life and then his usage of the cocaine and the alcohol and his past history screams to me, this is a person who would do these things. But then like the fact that he's using these substances and every person's like Kelly, yours. So I could only say two that, but like nobody's seen like even like an angry outburst from this guy. He's using stuff that he shouldn't be able to control himself. I'm not saying he's going to be beating his girlfriend in front of you guys, but someone should have seen him like get unreasonably mad.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and the weird thing about the cocaine use is that that's kind of what started the whole thing that on New Year's Eve is that she supposedly walked into him doing cocaine, but the autopsy showed he had a 0.125% blood alcohol content, which is above Ohio's legal limit for driving, but there weren't any signs of drugs in his system, which I found interesting.
So mm-hmm. they do find a cut straw. You think that she planted it?
No, I don't think she planted it. I think he probably had intentions to do it. I don't know how long cocaine stays in your system. I would imagine it'd be longer than a few hours, you know.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
Or probably even a week or so.
As far as traceable,
I'm not talking about as affecting you.
I don't know. I don't have any stats on that. But yeah, there was supposedly, you know, nothing found in the system. But she did testify that she saw him, you know, with the straw over something white on the table. So whether or not, I'm assuming he just, with her bursting in like that, and I guess she started screaming from what I understand from her testimony and everything, and the friend's house that they were at, you know, I guess her friend had told her they can either, you know, take it down a notch or they needed to leave, and they ended up leaving.
So cocaine stays in your system for a blood test up to 2 days and for a urinalysis up to 3 days. So
they would have been caught. Yeah, it would have been found out. And Annie, I'm curious, you know, when you went over with her when she was on house arrest, were you point blank and asking her, like, what the fuck did you do? I mean, what did you ask her anything?
I really didn't. I was already so afraid to even be there, but I was going through counseling because I was not dealing with it well. And so I just got to the point where my counselor told me, she's like, look, if you do go over there, which I think that you should, because I think that you need that closure, you need to go over there and not pry, because she's not allowed to talk about anything anyway. She was not allowed to tell me anything except for, so she just kept telling me, like, don't you remember me telling you?
Yeah.
And I mean, after I talked to the attorney, I called her and I was like, how dare you? How dare you have them call me and try to get me to lie? I told you about it. I said, you told me about it after you killed him.
It's, I gosh, that would be because I have a true crime freak mind, obviously, given, you know, what we do every week. And I pretty much live true crime stuff during the week because, you know, I have to research
while I'm working too.
I don't know how I would be in that situation. I wouldn't be afraid, but I mean, that's just me because I'm not much scares me because I'm a gun person too. So I have my CCW too. I don't know if I could not ask her what it was like, what was going through her mind, that type of thing. I don't think I could control myself if, you know,
I was with her.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, you're going over there for like closure and to basically say goodbye. She's got this agenda of apparently planting, right? Trying to plant. But just a side note, it is possible, especially during traumatic situations, to have false memory.
Yeah.
She could actually believe that she told you this, but it's sounding more and more like she's building a defense.
That's how I felt. I mean, I just remember the feeling of, why are you trying to drag me into this? Right. Like, this is what happened in your life. And I told her, I don't want anything to do with this. I will pray for you. I will make sure that people don't drag your name through the mud. But you did something wrong. No matter if you were afraid or not, you shot him 10 times. Like, I can understand you could have wounded him to get by him, but you shot him 10 times.
Yeah. Unfortunately, so to me,
shooting him 10 times actually builds her defense more, because that more leans towards being dissociated from the situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's honestly really, it was like the big thing in her trial too, that and the bullet casings. That was, God, the freaking casings, they went over crap like on just the placing of where the casings had landed, you know, saying that, because according to the autopsy, she was 2 to 3 feet away from him when she shot him, which is close. And the bullet casings, you know, it's just a big question. Like, the first people on the scene were very confused about how they were laying. But I mean, you got to keep in mind too, if she was giving him CPR, I'm sure she wasn't concerned where the casings were, especially since she claims she doesn't remember actually, you know, pulling the trigger. When she snapped to after she had shot the full clip, when she snapped to, she said she was pointing the gun at the wall and still trying to pull the trigger. And on a Glock, when the clip's empty, the slide just kicks back. It's empty. You can't really, there's nothing really to pull. And that was one of the prosecution's arguments. But then we have testimony from psychologists about, you know, how that kind of just proves that she was in a dissociated state, because she didn't realize he was laying on the floor bleeding. And I mean, they got kind of graphic with, you know, I guess one of the first guys on the scene was, he put Rob's teeth back in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
So they could further examine it. I mean, it was kind of a very gruesome.
What is the deal with the casings though? Are they saying because they've been strewn all about that they feel she's like chasing him around, shooting him over and over again?
Well, kinda. And there was an animation that they played in the trial that, the animation was just weird. I mean, just the way that they said things happened, it's almost like she was going towards him, you know, instead of trying to get away.
Yeah.
She was just firing, trying to get closer and closer and just pretty much taking him out. So, I mean, and they're saying that, you know, at some point she had to be like right on top of him firing too. So that's, you know, basically they're just trying to discredit the whole disassociative state, you know, so they could get her on murder one or whatever and be done with it. But, you know,
murder one would have to be premeditated, right? So they'd have to go for like murder two.
Yeah. Cause they couldn't, I mean, there's no way. There's, I don't think they had any witnesses to corroborate any type of premeditation, because it just wasn't there. I mean, even Annie said that they had already had plans the next day, you know, for her to help her with her finances and things like that, which is fascinating to me. It's just, this is the first time we've ever talked to somebody who's was really involved with the people that had the crime. So it's nice to have that insight. Yeah. And
you were one sleep away from being there.
Yeah.
You're telling me the grace of God, I was sick. I ended up being sick and like, I just fell asleep.
I can't even imagine. And who was it that actually texted you? I mean, do you want to say who was? And he's like one of your good friends, and
obviously no, Rob's.
He's an ex.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So he was Rob's best friend, right? That's how you met Rob?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know of anyone besides her family, like any of your friend group, that is actually supportive of Colleen?
She had no friends.
So all her friends were through Rob.
Yes. I mean, she could have had friends at work. She could have had friends that I just didn't know about, but I never heard about her having any friends other than the friends that were Rob's.
That's very intriguing, because like, I'm a bit antisocial, but I've got a few close friends, you know, and the only reason I'm saying that is to mean I'm not a sociopath, but that is like a sign of sociopath, right? Like, where like everyone you know is through your significant other that you've been love bombing and getting to. And I say love bombing because they married within 2 months. This woman's telling this guy he's the best thing since sliced bread, and she's kind of encompassing his life is now her life. And it could work vice versa. He could have done the same thing to her. This seems like a very just bad relationship, right? This is
very volatile.
Very volatile. What's the word for it where both people are a little messed up and shouldn't be together? There's a common phrase. It's used like every day.
Not corrosive couple of. For Pete's sake, it's what the Ken and Barbie killers are.
I'm looking it up.
It'll come to me after we stop recording.
Codependent. It's a very codependent relationship, right? Where both these people have kind of latched onto each other. Because like, even if it was her pushing like for the marriage and the love bond, it's like he shouldn't be marrying her within 2 months either.
Well, I don't know if I would classify it as codependent if she was the one who was in control of everything. Because I mean,
she's in control, but that's what she gets out of it. He's getting whatever emotional stuff he needs. I mean, he wouldn't let himself be controlled if he wasn't wrapped into it.
But is he getting emotional? I mean, Annie, what do you think about? I mean, how do you feel about their relationship? Just looking back at it now.
I don't think that it was healthy, but I also wasn't in a healthy relationship. I mean, our relationship was abusive. And so I was going through a lot of things and trying to get away from it. And so I didn't really pay attention to like exactly how he may have been treating her. But I just remember that I never thought that it was like bad, because I wanted something like that, if that makes sense, because I was going through emotional abuse, physical abuse. Mm. And that's why I left. But like, if I'm going through that, why aren't you telling me as a friend, like, you know what, Rob has put his hands on me. I feel you. You either can tough it out or you leave. Like, why wouldn't you have comfort to me? Like, I mean, why wouldn't you tell me that stuff? Why would you try and plant it in my brain later? So I always thought Rob is very submissive and she was the dominant one. Always.
So you did confide in her.
I confided in her because I left.
And she said nothing.
No, she said nothing to me. I mean, okay, so personally, I got choked out in Maslin. Like,
wow.
I was in, we were downtown Maslin and I was getting choked. So I called her because I had nowhere to stay. I ended up walking to my mother's house and she picked me up the next day and took me home. And so I'm clearly telling you all of this stuff. I'm confiding in you, but nothing's happening. Like, you're not telling me anything.
Right. You would think that she, just to be able to show empathy and concern to you, would be like, I'm going through the same thing. Oh my God. Like, and you could co-relate on that. It would have been the perfect window
to address that. I mean, but if she was controlling and, you know, wore the pants in that relationship and, you know, it was always her way, maybe. And I'm not trying to make excuses for her. Please don't think that. But maybe she couldn't allow that side of herself, if she was being abused, to be shown, because, you know, maybe in her mind it shows that she's weak. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that you were. Please, you know, don't. I don't want you to think that
at all. I'm just trying to
kind of play devil's advocate with maybe why she kept it to herself. You know, maybe she was embarrassed or thought it just, she was just very weak that she allowed someone to put their hands on her.
Yeah. Verify this too, Annie, like in the same regard of what Mandy was saying, like from what you've said and from like the stuff I've read, I'm getting the feeling that Colleen's not a super emotional person anyway. She is kind of, for lack of a better term, forgive me, military world. She's military, right? She's like very rigid.
Yes. 100%.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, I think I'd like to play some of her testimony. Obviously, I'm not going to play it all because, God, we'd be here all day long. And I apologize if this, you know, brings up some uncomfortable emotions for you, because, you know, I remember you said you kind of had some problems listening to it before. The first part I'm going to play is when she's talking about past abuse that her and Rob had dealt with in their relationship. And this is about an 8-minute clip.
Mandy, before you play the past abuse, I do want to bring up that didn't his mother admit that she told him about the abuse and said that she would kill him if he ever did it again? So we do know of one person that was directly told that would be his advocate.
Yeah, and his mom actually did testify to that fact that, you know, Colleen had, I guess one of the nights they had an argument, she had made dinner and the family was supposed to come over and have dinner. Well, she ended up taking the food over to his parents' house and they had dinner. And that's when, you know, Colleen had told his mom that he was being a real asshole to her that night. And basically that, you know, if he ever put his hands on her again, that she was going to shoot to kill him.
Yeah,
she said that to his mom.
Right. And she would totally be his advocate. She, of course, mentions it to the prosecution because she wants them to know that she's talked about killing him before. But she also admits that her son, through Colleen's words to her, had said that there was abuse.
You know, I found this to be a very fascinating trial because the prosecution sucked. They were horrendous. I mean, like, I'm talking worse than O.J. Simpson prosecution. But her defense team was spot on. I mean, she had a very good defense team. And they kind of, discredited his mom because when, you know, they were cross-examining her, you know, Detective Golicki, he was one of the guys like first on the scene and everything, you know, his mom had talked to Detective Golicki, but never once mentioned that conversation that they'd had or that, you know, Colleen had called the cops on Rob for, you know, domestic abuse or whatever. So it kind of just really made what she was saying sound nothing more than like a Hail Mary to get, you know.
And maybe it was. I mean, she's going through a lot, obviously losing his son, but like it could be the same planting in reverse where she was trying to show some sort of premeditation, which I think we've all kind of agreed we don't think was there.
Yeah, I don't believe at all that anything was premeditated. I'm still not 100% sure she was in a dissociated state, but I'm kind of leaning more towards it. But it's interesting to hear Annie's perspective of, you know, who she is, because, and we'll talk about it again once we hear this, but okay. So this first about 8 minute clip is her talking about some of the domestic abuse that Rob supposedly did to her. And I'm going to apologize. The audio on this trial is absolutely.
Gentlemen, if you're taking the steps, I guess you're getting your exercise this morning. There is that positive. So thank you for accommodating us while we take care of our legal issues. We are prepared to proceed. So with that, Ms. Mills, you may continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before the break, Colleen, we were talking about November 13th, 2014, when you called 911. Would you start there? When was the first time you called 911 on November 13th?
I had called it on our way home from the bar when Rob had been slamming me into the side of the car. And I ended up dropping the phone. And when we parked, I was able to get out and grab my phone. You can hear him screaming at me.
Stayed.
He screamed at me to get out of the car. And I did. I ended up going over to my neighbor Judy's house. And I did talk to the dispatcher multiple times, and I wanted them to prevent him from coming back. And they weren't able to. So, and they asked if I wanted to make a report, and I declined to do so. I didn't understand why I would make a report if they weren't going to stop him from coming back. Also, you know, I knew it would prevent him from seeing his son, and I didn't want to cause any more controversy. I went home that night and I packed a bag for him and I wrote a note and I put it out on the front step. And I locked the screen door and the front door. I knew he didn't have his keys because he kept his house keys and his truck keys separate.
What did the note say, Pauline, that you left with his bag?
I had heard that he wasn't allowed to come into the house and that we were done. And I took care of the animals. I'm using my phone and called my coworker to say that, you know, I don't know if I'd make it in the next day. And I went to bed. I put my pajamas on and I went to bed.
What's the next thing you remember after you fell asleep?
I was asleep and I sat down on top of him and took a pillow and put it over my head.
Tissue's talking to right there.
And I wasn't able to move and I couldn't breathe and I passed out.
Did you actually work that particular morning, Pauline?
I'm sorry. Can you ask the question again?
I can't. Did Did you actually end up forking then that particular morning when you went in?
When I went into work, I didn't clock in. And I still had to take my dog Scarlet to the vet. And it was, I did talk to Rob through Facebook. Because I didn't have any phone. And I didn't clock in, and so I left.
Colleen, do you have any idea how Rob got into the house that particular morning? Because you said you had locked it and he didn't have his keys.
He had to have broken in, and he broke the screen door, and it's still broke to this day. The latch.
After work, did you go back home?
I did.
And what did you, was Rob there when you got home?
He was at the house.
Did you have a discussion with him?
When I came into the house, Rob was there, and he had my gun to his head, and he was saying he was going to kill himself. And of course I told him, no, please don't do it. And I talked to him down and told him, I loved him and I cared about him. And he ended up putting my gun down, so I ended up taking it and putting it in my vehicle.
And did you actually then take Scarlet to the vet?
Yes, I had to take her to the vet.
What happened after you finished at the vet?
I came home and I went to work and I worked a half a day.
And generally when you work, Colleen, how long? What's your regular hours?
In that rotation, I was working, I think, like an 8:30 to 5.
So did you leave work then right at 5 on that particular day?
Yes, I would have.
And what happened on your way home?
When I came home, Rob was parked in the parking lot. There's a restaurant called Bugsby's, and it's right outside where you turn into my allotment, and I saw his truck parked there, so I stopped. And when I got into his truck to see what he was doing, and there was empty beer bottles all over, and he was sobbing and crying, and I got in and I talked to him.
Did he have any clothes with him?
Yes, he had packed his clothes.
And when you got into his truck, what did you talk about?
Well, I talked about, worried about how hard it was for him and that he needed to get help. We promised he would, and that we would work through this, and I agreed. He was still heavily intoxicated, and so I was just like, just go home and go to bed.
When you say that he would give help, what kind of help did you need?
To go to counseling.
And did Rob agree to go to counseling?
Yes.
At any point in time during your marriage, did the both of you go to counseling?
No.
Andy, what's going through your mind when you're watching this?
So many things. Sorry.
You're fine. Take your time.
It's just, I don't know. I just can't believe her, because I understand battered women's, like, I'm sorry. I understand being a battered woman, that you don't typically want to go right back into it. But I don't understand that if he was telling you with a gun held to his head that he was going to commit suicide, how you left him and went to the vets and then went back to work after something that big.
Right.
I don't understand how her brain works. And I think that that's one of the things that, like, bothered me the most about her when I first met her, because I'm like, how does your brain work? Why do you say these things? Why do you say this? Why do you say that? Like, I was just very off put by her, and seeing that just brought back so many different emotions. It's like talking about it is one thing, but like actually seeing her, it's just, she just seems phony to me. And I hate to say that because I wish no ill will on anyone, and not even her. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like there is way more to this story than she, I mean, of course she doesn't want people to know the whole entire story because then she wouldn't already be out of jail.
Right.
I have a question about her tone, right? You've already expressed that she's kind of an unemotional person. She's kind of in control of the situation as far as the relationship goes. So I see her as a dominant person.
Yeah. And
her voice in that clip is like extremely like little child-ish, right? It's very like
demure.
Right. Like is that the way she sounded when she spoke?
No. And I think that that's another thing that just kind of like was so off-putting to me and why I couldn't actually watch it is because I just didn't feel like that was her.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden she became this goody two-shoe Christian woman where before she was just kind of like ready to party, let's do this. I mean, she didn't do drugs or anything like that because she would have completely ruined her career.
Yeah.
But it's like, how do you go from representing yourself as one person to representing yourself as a completely different person?
Right.
Like now all of a sudden you believe in God.
Do you think that was an act, or do you think she really felt contrition for what she had done?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
I have one more question about just like from first glance, her story's so detailed, right? It's like, I was being smothered with a pillow. Then I come to in the shower. I've got snot coming down my face. I finished the shower because I'm so devastated. I don't know what else to do. And then we end up to the situation we talked about where he's threatening to commit suicide. And then she's going to the vet. And then she's doing a half day at work. And it's like, there's beer bottles when they finally meet. And she's like, we're going to go get you in counseling. It's going to be like, she's got a lot of detail. However, she also doesn't seem like from a glance, I'm like, there's so much detail. This has to be true. But then also from a glance, she doesn't pause to think. Do you think this is just a well-rehearsed witness? Because usually defense doesn't put you on stand.
I think that the sobbing was a pause to think.
Honestly, I do kind of believe her. I don't believe the emotions that she's trying to emote on the stand right now, though.
Thank you. Yes.
So you think she's souped up the stuff?
Yeah.
Like there's events, but she's making it not how she really felt.
Well, here's the thing. Think about it, though. Annie is talking about how she's a very in control, very emotionless person. I can imagine this being traumatic. You know, somebody smothered you with a pillow till you passed out, and then you woke up in the shower, and now they're threatening to kill themselves. And you know, I for me personally, I'd be more worried about my dogs. You know, you right now, if somebody threatened any of my babies, I would have shot them. No problem whatsoever.
Here's an autopsy question: do we know which bullet killed him? Was he? Well, she was still trying to revive him after 10 shots, right? So. Probably not one. I was just thinking in my mind came up with another scenario. She flips, right? She shoots him. He's already dead. She's mad at the situation and just unloads, right? But he probably didn't die on the first few shots.
No, not with the way. There wasn't a whole lot of blood at the scene, which is interesting to me because being shot that many times, you'd think there would just be a lot. But I mean, the prosecution showed photos of the area where he was shot. And they actually did show photos of him, which, I mean, his face was totally bloody. And, you know, because she shot him pretty much. She pretty much just sprayed his whole body for the most part. Like, they were showing x-rays in court, and I think they said every single one of his organs had been punctured.
Wow.
So, yeah, she...
One more question for Annie in regard to... I know we've already gone over well that you've seen no anger from this person. You didn't know of any of the abuse stuff. But you said it wasn't a healthy relationship. Did Rob ever confide in you, or did Colleen confide in you that they were thinking about seeking counseling for any of the aspects of their relationship?
No, but I believe that Rob said to Aaron that he was not happy, like that it wasn't going well. And I think that that's kind of when he turned to coke.
Yeah.
Was around that time, because she was becoming very controlling of like every single thing that he did in his life. And I think that that was a lot for him, because here he is opening his life to this woman. And then all of a sudden, like, she's trying to control the situation where maybe he felt like he should be controlling it. I'm not really sure. I just know that it was rocky. Yeah. I do know that, especially because of the coke. I mean, I don't know when drugs don't cause issues in a relationship, you know?
Right. Or maybe, like, if she's super controlling of this relationship, maybe that night the thing that snapped her was he tried to leave.
That was kind of what I was thinking. And I hate to say it, but it's like, after watching all of this and them saying that they thought that the shooting had started with him walking away, she shot like what, two times, and then shot him in the side when he was turning around to like figure out what was going on. And then he turns around and he gets shot in the side, and then he gets shot in the chest and then his head. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, it sounded like the way that they found him, it sounded like he was walking away. Yeah. And I think that the minute that I heard that, everything just started to like click in my brain. And I was like, I can't ever talk to this person ever again.
Okay. So I think we are at a good stopping part right now for our, what's going to turn out to be a 3-part series on my friendship with Colleen McKernan and our anonymous friend, Annie. So be sure to tune in next week for part 2, again, of our 3-part series. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is, well, actually just go to our website, www.throughtheabysspodcast.com, and it will take you to any social media link you desire, as well as every single one of our episodes.
Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff!